Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
KMOX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy.
With all this mess, the radio is the only thing that's really working good.
Stop spending! Stop spending!
Welcome to the dawn of a new unified Republican government.
They can run the okey-doke on you, bamboozle you.
We are not enemies, but friends.
So we finally have this God that's gonna come down and help us all.
Now, Mark Reardon.
You just referred to Trump as a God.
Yeah.
On KMOX.
Well, I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but it feels like a Monday to me for a variety of reasons. And we start the week. The good news is Christmas is almost here, right? We're only a couple of weeks away. Hey, you know what? I just thought of this, and I probably should have planned on this earlier. Dave, remind me, we want to start working in the Christmas bumps this week. I had kind of forgotten about that. I like to sprinkle them in, and then we'll go all Christmas bumps next week. So good afternoon, sort of a somber day for a variety of reasons. And we're going to start with the passing of George Herbert Walker Bush. And we had the processional, easy for me to say, from the funeral parlor to Air Force One, en route to Washington right now, about to land. Steve Futterman is in Houston. That's where he'll be covering that story all week long, because I believe that the casket will return to Houston in a couple of days. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing fine. It's a day of nostalgia, obviously a sad event, but when you realize George Herbert Walker Bush lived longer than any other former president, you can't say that he didn't live a long life. He lived a long, full life, and it had impact, too.
Well, long, full life where he decided to still, you know, do some skydiving when he got older, yeah. Which I always loved. I mean, I love the fact, you know, Steve, I mentioned this to someone earlier. I was starting to go to bed on Saturday night, and I looked at Twitter, and I had not heard at that point. I think maybe the word had just come down about George Herbert Walker Bush, and I clicked on the link to the Washington Post, and I started reading the obit. And the obit was very, very lengthy, but very compelling. I think it took me about 15 minutes to read the whole thing. I learned a few things about, you know, President Bush I had forgotten, perhaps, and then, you know, some of the details in there just sort of came back to my memory. But obviously, his accomplishments, I think we forget how much he accomplished even before he was in the White House.
Oh, yeah, CIA director, which means he knew basically everything, all the dirt, and more than that, probably. He was also UN ambassador to China, head of the Republican Party at a very bad time, around the era of Watergate, not the best time to be head of the GOP. But I think what really is important is to remember how he learned to relate to other leaders around the world as ambassador at the UN and also in China and possibly as CIA director. And that led him, in my belief, to his greatest accomplishment, putting together a remarkable coalition to fight Saddam Hussein and kick him out of Kuwait. That was a remarkable feat. If you look at the countries that joined the U.S., wow. And what also really, I think, touched these countries, made George Herbert Walker Bush a bit of a hero to these countries, is that he lived up to the promise. The promise he gave to these countries was that all we want to do is kick Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. We will not go after him after he's out of Kuwait. Guess what? He lived up to the promise. And there were many critics at the time, Mark. You may remember.
Oh, said, of course,
oh,
yeah.
Finish the task. Go after him. I think we learned later on, his son sure learned later on, what finishing that task involved. It was very complicated.
So what are the plans for the week? There was a 21-gun salute. I was watching some of the coverage this morning, the casket en route to Washington, but it's coming back to Houston, correct?
Right. It will go to Washington this evening. It will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda, as, you know, that's if you're a former president, you're supposed to get that honor. And he will lie in state all day tomorrow. On Wednesday in Washington, the state funeral at the National Cathedral. All the former presidents, I believe, Jimmy Carter said today he will be there. You'll have Barack Obama, obviously George W. Bush, the current president, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton. We believe they will all be there. Then on Wednesday night, the body will be flown back here to Texas. Thursday, a service at his local church, the Bush Family Church, here in Houston, St. James Episcopal Church. And then on Thursday, around sunset, or maybe after sunset, he will be laid to rest at College Station, Texas, which is around 70, 80 miles from here. That's on the campus of Texas A&M. That is where the Bush Presidential Library is located, and they will transport the body from the Houston area to College Station by train. It will be interesting to see if we will see these moving scenes of people standing along the railway tracks with signs waving goodbye. It might be a very, very moving event.
Steve, it's not difficult to see a lot of compare and contrast here, even with some of the comments that have been made by Jim Baker and John Sununu and people that worked in the administration. You start thinking about that era in politics compared to this era in politics. Very different, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there was more camaraderie. You could work with the other side. It wasn't viewed as a horrible thing for a Republican to work with a Democrat, and he worked with them. One interesting thing that came up this week, which I was not aware of, it's been known, but I just wasn't aware of it. When Lyndon Johnson, the last Texan president before George Herbert Walker Bush, when he went back to Texas after leaving the presidency, remember he chose not to run in 68 and Richard Nixon succeeded him. So in 1969, as he left Washington, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was, you know, an adult by then, but a young adult, he was the only Republican office holder to go and say goodbye to Lyndon Johnson. This is all according to the Johnson Library, and according to the Johnson Library, Lyndon Johnson never forgot that and always had respect for George Herbert Walker Bush. He didn't mind working across the aisle. He wanted to beat you very badly. He was very competitive. If you ever heard about his golf games, which were like almost like speed golf, he was very competitive, loved to jump from the plane. He jumped, by the way, he did a jump from a plane and a parachute when he was already confined to a wheelchair.
I know.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
So he liked to compete. He wanted to win. He was tough. You can't not be tough if you're a CIA director, if you win the presidency. There are moments when you don't do necessarily the thing that your mother would want you to do, but you want to win. But he overcame that and was able to work with others. And that friendship with Bill Clinton, the man who humiliated him. When you run for re-election and you're defeated as president, hasn't happened that often. I believe before George Herbert Walker Bush, it was Jimmy Carter. Before Jimmy Carter, I believe it was Herbert Hoover. Doesn't happen very often. So when you're humiliated like that and you can become friends with a man who did that humiliation, Bill Clinton, that says something about you.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman, I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon. You're going to stay stationed in Houston this week, right?
Yeah, it's very difficult to go and come back. It could be done, but probably, you know, it's not all about me as much as I'd like it to be about me. So I'm staying here, and I'll be picking up the coverage on Thursday, Wednesday night when you return, and then Thursday.
And we will no doubt speak with you later in the week. Steve, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sounds good. And by the way, I will tell you, as a person, he was one of my favorite presidents. Forget the politics. I might have agreed, I might have disagreed, but I liked him. It was just fun to be around.
That's awesome. Thanks, Steve.
Take care.
2:13, I'm watching some video as we were chatting with Mr. Futterman. They are awaiting the arrival of the presidential aircraft at Andrews Air Force Base, or Joint Base Andrews in Maryland, as they call it now. We'll continue to keep you posted on that. We will air the funeral on Wednesday morning. The coverage, I believe, on CBS starts at 10 a.m. during Charlie Brennan's show. So a lot of memories this week. And, you know, as I mentioned to Steve, it's hard to not compare and contrast. It's very difficult for me, and whether you're a supporter of President Trump or not a supporter of President Trump, it's hard to not flash forward to what a presidential funeral will look like when President Trump passes. Because, well, this may be the last one where there's not a lot of controversy. You start thinking about Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter and George W. Bush, and I guess maybe, well, we know that President Obama. Not to, you know, telegraph anyone's deaths. I just think that the tone of the coverage is going to be very different in the future, certainly for President Trump. So a little bit more storytelling this afternoon from Ann Wagner, the Missouri congresswoman who ran his campaign, George Herbert Walker's campaign in 1992, and a bunch of other stuff I wanted to get to. So Glenn Reynolds is a guy who's been on the show. Let me just preview something else for the next hour. He's a law professor at the University of Tennessee. He writes a column on a regular basis at usatoday.com and in the paper, USA Today. Hard copy as well, just not online. And he had a great blog and Twitter handle, and he was known as Instapundit. And quite candidly, I got a lot of material from Glenn because he would tweet out a bunch of things that I thought were interesting. And again, he's been a guest on the show quite a bit. Well, he deleted his Twitter account, and he explained why in a piece that was in USA Today. Now, a lot of people thought that when Glenn's Twitter account went away, he was also suspended by Twitter because he's a conservative. And there have been a lot of those stories that have been circulating and questions about who's getting suspended and who's not getting suspended. But apparently, he took it down. Now, I think that the reasons that he did that are quite interesting. And we'll talk with him in the next hour at 3:20 on KMOX. All right, welcome back. Throughout the afternoon, the 60 Minutes piece last night that Nora O'Donnell did on George Bush was really good, with all the former presidents chiming in, and especially with George W. Bush telling some stories. And this is one of my favorites. Congressman Wagner is on the phone. We'll get to her in just a moment. But this one, I'm watching the interview, and I was actually listening to it this morning in Washington. I was doing some work on the computer, and my head certainly popped up when George W. Bush told this story.
This is a guy, by the way, who goes to Yale, is kind of the star at Yale, baseball captain, Phi Beta Kappa, and was expected to go to Wall Street. And he decides to move to Odessa, Texas. And he goes out there and rents a duplex. This is an oil-filled boomtown now in 48. And our neighbors in this duplex were hookers.
Really?
Yeah. And we shared the bathroom with them. And
what did Barbara Pierce Bush think about that?
Yeah, I don't know, but I thankfully was not old enough to know.
I thought that was a great story, and he told a couple of them about his father during that interview. And Congresswoman Ann Wagner is with me this afternoon. She ran President Bush's campaign in 1992 in Missouri. She's with me this afternoon. Ann, how are you?
I'm good. I've been spending a weekend of reminiscing and celebrating and passing back emails and texts and photos and things with friends from, gosh, decades ago that were part of my life and certainly a part of President George Herbert Walker Bush's life.
You know, we've known each other for a long time since I've been back here in St. Louis, but in 92, I was in Columbia, Missouri. It was funny. I remember that presidential race very well, and I remember the night it happened because I had eye surgery in October of 1992, and there was nothing that I wanted to do more than get back before the election because, you know, I was into politics, and I anchored the coverage. This was on KFRU in Columbia at the time, and it was my first night back at work because I had the surgery, and I was off for a month, and I probably overdid it. Things did not turn out as well, obviously, for President Bush in that campaign for a variety of reasons. But I didn't know that you ran the campaign in Missouri back then.
I did. I was 29 years old.
Wow.
And,
really?
And yes. And I was obviously born in 62, and my birthday's in September. I actually have a beautiful birthday card, 30th birthday card, that the president gave me in 1992 in September on my birthday, with a beautiful note in it. He put a little presidential stick pin in it. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was, I have to tell you. I mean, the small gestures of kindness, a note, a call, any kind of moment of encouragement or gratitude. But I was all over the state. I had two little boys, and I was probably in St. Louis that night, and it was just an amazing, amazing ride. He was a mentor, a role model to me. He taught me, honestly, that public service is a noble profession, and taught me about leadership and our duty to serve others. So I have nothing but incredible admiration for George Herbert Walker Bush.
Well, I, you know, again, that's an interesting little nugget with you running that campaign and being 29 at the time. How were you picked for that?
Well, you know what? I had gone to work, you know, Ray, this Ashcroft's governor then, remember?
Right.
And Baker loved Ashcroft, and James Baker loved the fact that I could put together anything in Missouri in a dime, a huge rally, an event, a round table. When you know, when they left the Houston convention, in leading up to the election in 1992, they left that convention. I had been in Branson. The first place that George Herbert Walker Bush came was to Branson, Missouri. It was there for 2 days, overnighted. I did huge rallies with Glenn Campbell and Loretta Lynn. I mean, if Baker and the president needed something done, they called Wagner and Ashcroft to get it put together. And I even remember that. I was down there for 2 weeks in advance. I couldn't go to Houston for the RNC convention because I was down there working. And the notes that he wrote to thank those of us that had been down there working to put that splash together right after the convention was pretty big. But Ray was working for John Ashcroft, my husband, at the time. He was his chief legal counsel and then his director of revenue. And I moved there, left Ralston Purina here in St. Louis, and moved up there and worked for the party. I did redistricting in 90 and 91 and did such a bang-up job that Ashcroft and crew said, all right, Wagner's the one that's going to run the state for Missouri.
Yeah, that basically was the start of your political career then.
It was. It was. And as I said, he was just so marvelous during that time. But really, where he was most grateful to me, and I have some of my fondest memories, Mark, or when I was party chairman in 2000, and that around that time frame, I was for 7 years, and helped to make sure that Missouri went for George W. Bush at the time. The picture I have posted of President George Herbert Walker Bush giving me a big hug was during W.'s campaign.
Is that on Twitter? You posted that up there, Ann?
It is. Yeah. It is on my Facebook page, too, and him giving me a big hug. And it's not an auto pen at the bottom. It's just he wrote, "A great leader," and he signed it. And he thanked me and sat down with me and was so grateful for what I was doing for his son. And he's just, you know, he's a family man, a man of faith, put his country above himself. I mean, just so accomplished. And just like I said, I could tell you story after story after story. I put together the debate at Washington University, and it was the first time that WashU had hosted a presidential debate. And I had the president staying down at the Drury Inn in Union Station. And there was a restaurant in the basement called Lombardo's. And there was a little private party and dinner afterward. And the president, in his kindness, I mean, there I was, you know, just a kid. And he invited my husband and I to stay for dinner with the family and his close associates. It was, you know, and he did it personally, you know. I'm filled with gratitude and admiration and love for this man.
Now, you're in Washington right now, Ann?
No, I am here in Bowen, but I'm leaving at the crack of dawn. You know, they canceled all of session and all of votes this week, but I am flying back for the viewing in the Rotunda, and then I am one of those that has the honor and privilege of going to the National Cathedral on Wednesday for his funeral. So I will be there.
I don't want to bring up a bad subject here, but Missouri went blue in 1992, and I only bring it up from this perspective because, you know, I was one of those guys, and I didn't follow politics quite as closely as I do now, but I was a news director at the time, and I remember when Bill Clinton got the nomination. I think a lot of people didn't know very much about him, but obviously he was more of a conservative Democrat. He was from Arkansas, and a lot of people point to no new taxes, read my lips, but I think it was a little bit more complicated than that.
I think it was, too. I think that a lot of President Herbert Walker Bush's legacy was probably stronger in the arena of foreign policy. I think there was probably a sense that domestically, maybe he was out of touch. It wasn't just the read my lips moment.
Yeah, the economy had turned at that point in not a positive direction at all.
It had, and I think that was a part of it. I can remember a couple of occasions, you know, when I was running the campaign here in Missouri. Remember that when he didn't even know what a scanner was at the grocery store, you know, kind of a couldn't tell you the price of milk kind of thing.
Right.
There was that moment, at the Wash U debate where he looked at his watch. Remember that? And people like kind of like he was like, can we get on with this?
I do remember that. So that was the 90s. That was that long ago. I guess
yeah.
I'm thinking in my mind that it was maybe a different, you know, that was his son. But yeah, I do remember that was a pretty big part of that debate.
I remember.
Can you imagine Twitter being around back then?
I remember it. So, you know, I mean, I don't want to say anything negative or disparaging about this man that I love so much and who really taught me so much about public service and the honor of it. But yeah, there were a multitude of factors that I think that went in. It was a nasty campaign too, so there were a number of factors that went into
a nasty campaign, and that's what makes it even more interesting that President Clinton and President Bush forged such a unique friendship, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, he has such. I mean, 41 had such a. Respect for the office of the presidency. You know, that famous note that he left Bill Clinton when that was waiting for him in the Oval Office that talked about that there's no higher honor than to serve and to labor in government beneath the great.
Yeah, it was a great note. I heard some of it this morning. It was really impressive.
And he talked about, remember, it was 41, it was Herbert Walker Bush that coined the phrase, a kinder and gentler nation. I mean, that was his line. And as I said, he's informed me in my public service. He's a lot of the reason why I ran a positive campaign, why I'm trying to call people to their highest and best and not their lowest and least. I have, as I said, just an incredible admiration and gratitude that in my early years of development in public service that I had him as a role model.
Just a quick question on what might happen the rest of December in Congress. So since this week has been taken off the table because of the passing of the president and the funeral, what does that mean for the rest of the year for Congress?
Well, there are about three things we've got to get done as far as I'm concerned. There may be some other ticky-tack things, but a farm bill. We need a five-year reauthorization of the farm bill, and we're about there. I think we've got it. It's being scored right now, and I think when we get back, we'll be able to pass that. We also have another tax relief package, an act that's going to be passed, that's going to has bipartisan support and in the Senate, too. So it will provide retirement plans to their workers and help kind of families start to save earlier. It's got some innovation packages for startup costs and companies, some technical corrections on the first tax package. It also does some things to the IRS that frankly makes it more taxpayer friendly and service.
Like shut them down, maybe?
Yeah, amen. You know, so we've got that. But the most important thing here is obviously the appropriations and the budget. And we've got the good news, Mark, is... For the first time in two decades, we finally have the Senate that played ball with us here, and 75% of the government has been, in fact, funded. But we've got a small piece that has yet to be funded, so they've kicked that out now till sometime in the next 2 weeks after this week, you know, up until the 21st, I think, of December, we'll have to finish up that budget, and that needs to get done. So
absolutely. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go here because I'm up against the news break, but thank you so much for sharing the stories, great stories this afternoon, Ann.
Thanks for the opportunity so much. I appreciate it very much.
Congresswoman Ann Wagner with us this afternoon on KMOX. You know who else has got a great story? And I haven't heard it yet. He sent me a picture this morning of the president with him, and that's Benjamin Conde, who used to run Westminster University and also Webster. He's at Wash U now as a consultant to the chancellor. But he sent a picture of George Herbert Walker Bush with his family, and we're going to hear the story coming up here next on KMOX. Well, my friend Dr. Benjamin Conde, who used to run Westminster University and Webster before that, reached out and sent a picture this morning of himself with his beautiful family with the former president, Herbert Walker Bush, who passed away, of course, over the weekend. And Benjamin, I haven't even heard this story with the picture. It looks like it's Kenny Bunkport sort of in the background. So I want you to share that story with me this afternoon.
Absolutely. It was July of 2016, and my family had...
Don't tell me yet. We'll start, because I haven't started the interview. So let's rock it out. Hang on a second. You kind of caught me doing something there that I usually don't do. So hold on a second here. You know, one thing that One thing that happens is, I will tell you this, I have to be honest in this situation, is we tape these interviews, and I did this one about an hour ago because of his schedule. So I asked him how he was doing.
Mark, it's good to be with you. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I haven't talked to you in a while. You sent a picture this morning of you and George Herbert Walker Bush and your wife and your daughter. It looks like it was at Kennebunkport. It's a fantastic picture. I know nothing about this picture, so I'm curious. Tell me the story.
It was a picture that was taken on July 16th, 2016. We were in Kennebunkport visiting Ambassador Burt Walker and his wife, Carol. And it was Sunday. And they said, well, guys, we're going to go have tacos at the Bushes for lunch. And I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting. Are you talking about H.W. Bush? He said, yeah, absolutely. Ambassador said, my cousin. So we got in the car and we drove over to Walker's Point. At the gate, there were a lot of sightseers there with cameras and things. And we were driven in through the gates, and the Secret Service folks waved us in. I remember just that you could tell that they were very familiar with the Walkers. So we got there and parked the car, walked up to the front of the house. And one of the more interesting things that I there was a little sign at the entrance of the Bush's residence that read, "To everything there is a season." And I just thought, wow, that kind of puts things in perspective. We walked in, the president was there to greet us, as well as Barbara, and jovial as I've seen him on television. And he said, "Benjamin, tell me about you. How? Tell me, where have you been, and give me, tell me your story." And I shared with him that I'm first generation American, came to the United States in 1979, and introduced my wife Bola and my daughter Rennie to the Bushes, and so we proceeded to have tacos, and the conversation was very simple. It was in the midst of the presidential election, and I asked the president, I said, what do you want to be remembered for? And he paused for a minute, and he said, I want to be remembered that I made a difference, and that while I was here, I made a difference in people's lives. And then he just continued the conversation. And of course, I never thought that I would meet the president of the United States or that I'll see him again. But that conversation and his response to my question has stayed with me forever.
Yeah, it made an impact. I can hear it in your voice. So what was your reaction then on Saturday night when you found out the news? Because I'm guessing yours was a little bit more emotional maybe than a lot of people.
Yeah, I've always, you could see the dynamic and chemistry between him and Barbara. And it was it was a loving one. It was one of care and passion. And when Barbara passed earlier this year, I felt that a big part of the president had died. I didn't really think I was trying to understand how he would handle that that vacancy in his life. That's a big part, Barbara. And so when I heard about his passing, I was surprised, but I realized that at his age, at 94, he was having some medical challenges, as we all do when we get older. But then it just kind of put things in perspective about how we all kind of come and we go. And at the end of the day, it's nothing about all the accumulation of wealth or how many cars we have or how much money we have in the bank. It's about the important things that we leave behind that are meaningful, that go on after we're gone. And, when our chair is cold and empty. And I just, that conversation I had with the president came full circle for me. And I think it also speaks to me as well in terms of, what do I want to be remembered for? And so that's how I felt on Saturday when I heard about his passing.
You know, we don't have choices in how we go, but I think it's fair to say that the way that George Herbert Walker Bush went out and living his life to the fullest and the love that he gave and received from his family and the, you know, as you mentioned, Barbara, I think a lot of us thought maybe he was hospitalized in the immediacy after that, and it's not uncommon for spouses to pass away within days or weeks or months of one another, but obviously a big piece of his life. When you think about that marriage, that in and of itself, what about, you know, that accomplishment, 73 years to Barbara Bush.
Years. Wow. 73 years. The marriage was one of those unique situations where people meet and connect and then connect forever. And you could see the sort of the connectivity, the chemistry between them. When we saw Barbara, she wasn't the Barbara that we will see on television that was very talkative and engaging. She was pensive, but yet I remember her asking my daughter, what's she going to do in college, and just sort of talking about the fact that she doesn't get around as much as she used to, because she had some health challenges, but that she would take a walk on the seaside every now and then, and she said she really very much cherished that the ability to be able to do that. But you know, it puts things in perspective in terms of what's important and what matters. And I think the Bushes are living an example of what that is all about.
Benjamin, hang on. Great stories about the former president. And we'll come back. I want to talk to you a little bit about trade because there were some developments over the weekend. That is your area of expertise, the new NAFTA, the 90-day suspension of the tariffs, and the agreement with China over the weekend. So we'll get to that here in just a couple of minutes on KMOX.
It's Mark Reardon now. Total Information PM starts at 4 with news, weather, traffic, and information you need on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. My friend Benjamin Akande with me this afternoon. He used to run Westminster University and also Webster University. He is a special assistant to the chancellor at WashU. And Benjamin, first of all, thank you so much for sharing your stories about President Bush. But I want to talk trade a little bit because this is your area of expertise. And there was some significant news over the weekend with China and the 90-day suspension of the tariffs. So can you explain that to us? What does this mean?
You know, you will recall, Mark, a couple of months ago when we spoke, I said to you that all these, you know, back and forth threats about we're gonna charge you tariffs and we're gonna do that, is that at the end of the day we're gonna solve this.
Yeah, you did,
and that two countries, China and United States, are too big to be in an economic war, and I think what happened on over the weekend validates that, and in the sense that they had this dinner. And President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping basically decided to postpone the threat to increase tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods to 25% from 10%. But they also sort of set a timeline about 3 months now for the two sides to negotiate several issues that have proved largely intractable in the past. My prediction is this. Those issues are not, they're big issues, you know, forced technology transfer by U.S. companies, intellectual property protection that the U.S. wants China to strengthen, you know, non-tariff barriers that impedes U.S. access to Chinese market, and then cyber espionage, which will be the critical issues. My prediction is they will resolve these issues in 3 months, and that you will see a series of conversations, and that China will provide some significant concessions in these areas that I've listed. And at the end of the day, it's not going to be a trade war. It's going to be a trade deal. And I think what we saw happen over the weekend is a clear commitment to continue sort of the process of economic liberalization, to force the Chinese to open up a little bit. And I got to tell you, if the president pulls this off, that will be real significant because of his threat. He was able to get them to the table and get them to negotiate.
Who has an upper hand in those negotiations? Who has more leverage, in theory?
Well, if you look at what they said occurred on Saturday, they reported that China agreed to buy more agricultural products right away. and then they also agreed to help North Korea to give up nuclear weapons. And then they wanted to crack down on the export of fentanyl, the heavily addictive opiate. These were some of the agreements that came out of that dinner over the weekend. And so when you think about who has the upper edge, I think it's going to depend on how each country plays it out. In my perspective, I think clearly America has the upper edge. And I think if stock market this morning reflects that there's a good feeling there that really good things are getting ready to happen. But let's wait and see. I think what Senator Roy Blunt said earlier today, that he wanted us to have sort of a cautious optimism, because right now soybean sales import, which is an important part of Missouri's agriculture sector, have gone to virtually zero because of the tariffs imposed by China. And so what we're waiting for is that let's see the actions, let's see the activities as a result of this conversation.
What about can we call it the new NAFTA that was agreed to? And a lot of people didn't think that this could happen. So what's your take on that? And does the old NAFTA still have to be, replaced officially?
The new NAFTA will replace the old NAFTA, but it will be subject to the vote of the Congress. This is what I anticipate would occur. I think the new NAFTA will be agreed to as stated, as signed by the three countries. But then you would have sort of addendums to that that would adjust this and adjust that. But the very essence of what was signed over the weekend will remain intact. I think it's got a new name now, but I think the Canadians are represented in one way and so are the Mexicans. But clearly, let's just call it the new NAFTA. And at the end of the day, I think it's very good for the United States, and it's very good for Mexico as well as Canada. It's a win-win situation for all involved.
Is there an easy way to kind of explain what the main differences are to make it a good deal like that?
I think what it does is it protects American auto companies. It allows it enables in terms of wage differentials across the different countries, even provides sort of an added wage contribution to folks working in Mexico, and of course the Canadians are good. And at the end of the day, I think it also allows for the free flow of trade between the three countries, and provides some sense of barrier and protection against EU. The European Union. So essentially, they're we're one entity instead of three countries. So I think from that perspective, I think it's a win situation for all three countries involved.
Dr. Benjamin Akande, who is currently senior advisor to the Chancellor at WashU, always great to have you on, Benjamin. It's probably been too long. I appreciate you sharing that great picture of President Bush and your family. I think I'm going to be right about this. That is framed and well placed in your house.
It is. And most importantly, the experience stays in our heart forever.
Absolutely. Benjamin, thank you so much. Great to talk with you, my friend, and have a great holiday season.
Pleasure, Mark.
Dr. Benjamin Akande with me this afternoon on KMOX. He's a sharp guy. And he was, a few months ago, there were two people, Andy Puzder, who used to run Hardee's and Carl's Jr., and of course had a... he never got onto the administration. He had controversy because of the ex-wife situation, which was a bunch of hooey anyway, because she even defended him. But he got caught up in a bunch of stuff with confirmation to be labor secretary, if I'm not mistaken. But Andy's a pretty sharp guy. He continues to write a bunch of columns and op-ed pieces. And he was on the show about the same time as Dr. Conde. And they both said, look, you got to be patient here. This is part of a plan. I think many of you might remember this because at the time I wasn't crazy about the tariffs. I thought this was something that could certainly, and it would. I think it would basically lop a tax onto some people in this country, many people, maybe all of us, because if the prices go up, it's going to be passed along to us in the long run anyway, that wiped away the tax cuts. So didn't think it was a great idea, although I said many times after that, smarter people than I, which wouldn't take very much, like Dr. Conde and also Andy Puzder were telling me, relax, to quote Aaron Rodgers, who can't say that anymore because now his coach has been fired, R-E-L-A-X. It might be okay. But to his point, this is what's interesting about this. This is pretty significant. It really is. And so is the new NAFTA deal. So while everybody's focusing on the negatives, and I get it, it's not too tough to focus on the negatives of the Trump administration, if he gets this done in the next 90 days, I wonder if anyone actually heaps praise or says, this was important. This was a very significant trade exercise, negotiation, and result. Maybe a long way to get there, but we'll see what happens. We'll come back. Really interesting. I can't wait to hear from Glenn Reynolds, who is from the University of Tennessee. He's one of my favorite pundits out there. He was known as Instapundit on Twitter. Tens of thousands of followers. He's closed his account. Why'd he do it? He's going to explain. 320 on KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.